Hear your favorite NFL legends sharing their stories and insights every week right here on Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazeri. Take it away, guys.
When the door is locked, there's no way out.
All right, and now joining us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former Major League pitcher Chris Hammond. Let me give you some background on Chris. He was born here in Atlanta. He was a sixth-round draft pick by the Cincinnati Reds in 1986. Made his Major League debut in 1990. Pitched in the big leagues from 1990 to 2006 with the Reds, Marlins, Red Sox, Braves, Yankees, A's, and Padres. Was a member of the Marlins' inaugural season in 1993. Played with the Yankees and pitched against the Marlins in the 2003 World Series. Was also a pretty darn good hitter. Four home runs, including a grand slam, which we'll talk about more here in a minute. And we are honored that Chris is with us tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Chris and Bob here. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Chris.
Oh, good to be here. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
So, Chris, I want to start out our time with you by talking about your time in Cincinnati. Major League debut in the 1990 season when the Reds go to the World Series and become World Series champion. You got an opportunity to come up in mid-July and then pitch a little bit more in mid-August. So suddenly you walk into a clubhouse and you're surrounded by, you know, the Nasty Boys, Rob Dibble, Norm Charlton, Randy Myers, plus Jack Armstrong on that pitching staff, Jose Rio, Tom Browning, Danny Jackson, not to mention the great starting lineup that the Reds had with, you know, Barry Larkin and Chris Sabo, Eric Davis, Paul O'Neill. My goodness, just a slew of great talent on that 1990s Reds team. What was it like suddenly being surrounded by those guys?
Well, I mean, I think my career would have spring forward if I wouldn't have come into such a high impact scenario. I mean, they were in first place and they were winning, and they were hesitant for calling me up to kind of like ruffle the feathers of the team. And it was a hectic time to get called up, but it was exciting for me as a rookie.
Speaking of, you know, exciting, what's it like, Chris? You know, Lou Piniella is the manager of those Reds teams for your first few years there in Cincinnati. You're a pretty fiery guy. What's your favorite Lou Piniella story?
I don't even know if I don't have a Lou. I mean, a favorite. I mean, all the ones that I remember. I mean, I want to forget. I mean, just because I was a rookie and I was a nervous wreck. I mean, I remember him coming out to the mound so many times, going, "What are you doing?"
For
me as a young pitcher, I mean, I don't remember too many good stories about that year. I mean, other than we won the World Series and I got a World Series ring, but it was a lesson learned for a young pitcher coming into a situation like the Reds had that year. But it was a learning tool for my career.
And Chris, I want to take you back to Monday, May 29th, 1995. You got a start that night for the Marlins against the Astros. Shane Reynolds is the opposing pitcher on the mound. You come up to bat in the bottom of the second with bases loaded, hit a grand slam. What's that feel like?
It was probably the most amazing feeling of my career, because I mean, I remember coming up and there was one out, and my sole objective is to hit a fly ball in the outfield. And when I hit the ball, I mean, I'm thinking I did it. And then when I was going to first, I was kind of jogging because I thought I did my job and hitting the sacrifice fly. And watching that the right fielder go back to the fence and it go into the stands, I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me! But it was the only curtain call of my career. I was sitting in the dugout. All my teammates just couldn't believe it, and Bobby Witt was going crazy. And he's like, "Get out there! They're giving you a curtain call." I'm like, "I'm not going out there." And he goes, "Have you ever had a curtain call before?" I'm like, "No." He goes, "Get out there!" But it was. I mean, I could sit here and try to explain the feeling I had by hitting a grand slam. But I mean, the feeling was just amazing.
Bob, questions for Chris?
Thanks for coming on the show, Chris. Great to have you. And I want to take you back to when you were growing up down south, Chris. Since this is a football show, we have a lot of crossover guests, but did you play other sports, Chris? And what got you to finally settle on baseball?
Well, I mean, I grew up playing baseball. My dad, he was one of the best coaches you could ever have. He made me love baseball. I played basketball most of the year when it wasn't baseball season. Unlike today, I mean, baseball is just year round. I mean, we had seasons and I played yard football. I never played organized football until like my seventh grade year in middle school. And, you know, I tried to quit during the year because I think one of my friends blew his knee out. Somebody landed on his knee and he's holding his knee and rolling around. I'm thinking, I want to quit. I don't want that to be me because I just love baseball and basketball. So those are the two sports that I played.
And Chris, you were among those fraternity of pitchers that made the successful transition from starting to relieving. You basically did pretty much in the late 90s going to the pen. Was it a very, very difficult transition for you, Chris, and did you ever become comfortable with it?
Well, I mean, it was really different for me because I started for 7 years and then I retired for 2.5 years. So when I came back, and I was talking to my agent, and he's like, I mean, there's not a quicker way back to the big leagues than being a middle relief left-hander out of the bullpen. And I'm thinking, let's do it. So, I mean, with my mindset on that's the easiest way back to the big leagues. I mean, I just forgot about starting and I always tell people now, as I look back at my career and where I go places and tell people who I was and how many years I played and they're like, well, I remember the name, but I go, if I had to do it over again, I would go right into middle relief and pitch about 20 years and nobody would know who I am. So, I talked to Glavin and Smoltz and Chipper a lot, and those guys can't go anywhere. And it's just a tragedy how, I mean, the better you are, the worse your life can be after you retire because, I mean, it's almost like you're a hermit without going into the malls and to the restaurants and they're like, oh, there's Chipper, get his autograph. And I'm just like, my career was just perfect.
Chris, you also had an opportunity to pitch in some iconic baseball stadiums, Fenway Park, Old Yankee Stadium, facing off in those rivalries and that sort of thing. What's it like taking the mound in those stadiums in front of those fans?
Well, there's not a more historic stadium to play in than Old Yankee Stadium. But there's not a more, I don't know, pressure pack series to pitch in than when the Yankees go to Fenway. I mean, there's nothing like it. But to answer your question, I mean, when I signed with the Yankees, and I knew I was going to be pitching in Yankee Stadium every home game, there's nothing compares to that. And I mean, I played in every stadium out there. I mean, before 2006, and just the majestic feeling of pitching for the New York Yankees and going into that old Yankee Stadium. I mean, I still get chill bumps by thinking about that.
And Chris, in 2002, you come back home to play for the Atlanta Braves. And like you mentioned a moment ago, now you're on the staff with Glavin and Maddox and Smoltz and all of those guys. Talk about what it was like coming back, pitching in front of family and friends and being a member of a staff with those guys here in Atlanta.
Well, when the Braves signed me, it was kind of relief because, I mean, for so many years I had to pitch against Glavin and Maddox and Smoltz, Avery and Marker, and I'm just like, good grief! I mean, does it get any harder than this? And me growing up in the South, and all my friends are Braves fans, and they're like giving me the chop, and I'm thinking, I mean, you don't even know, nobody even knows, you don't even know anybody on a Braves team. I mean, I'm your best friend growing up in high school. You don't even cheer for me. But I finally signed with the Braves, and Bobby Cox sent me down. He goes, we know you can pitch, and you're going to be one of our guys. And it was just an amazing feeling to finally be on the team with all those Hall of Famers and the Hall of Fame coach and Leo Mazzoni. And it was just a special feeling. And at the end of the year, with the year I had with the Braves, I just couldn't ask for any better fairy tale ending than what I had with the Braves.
And Chris, getting back to your time with the Yankees, you know, you joined them in 2003, a season when they went 101 games, go on to the World Series, pitch against the Marlins, you know, a team that you had played for. You get into Game 5 in that World Series. So I'm curious, what's it like? Are you constantly aware when you're on the mound that, you know, this is the World Series here? Are you aware of the magnitude of the event? Or, you know, once the game gets started, does it just become another baseball game?
Well, it made it a lot easier just because I played with the Marlins for so long. And it was, I mean, during the whole series, I mean, before games and after games. And I mean, my friends from down in Miami were always waiting on me. And it was kind of like a homecoming. And it really wasn't, it didn't feel like the World Series. You know what felt like the World Series was when we played Boston in that series beforehand. It was so exciting that I've never experienced a feeling like that all, I mean, ever before, and I probably won't ever again. But after that series, I mean, playing the Marlins was kind of like a after party with old friends that I grew up with, and especially with playing, like I said, playing with the Marlins for so long. I mean, just coming home to Florida was kind of like a homecoming to me.
And you've talked about, but you got the opportunity to pitch for Bobby Cox. You got the opportunity to pitch for Joe Torre. Give us your thoughts. What it was like, what was it like, you know, pitching and being around those two guys as your manager?
Well, they're totally two totally different managers. Bobby Cox was by far the best manager all around that I've ever played for, because I mean, he communicated with his players. I mean, it didn't matter if you were the 26th man on the team, or the 12th man on the pitching staff, or the bat boy, or the bullpen catcher. I mean, he treated everybody the same. When I was with the Yankees, Joe Torre, it was more of a business than a team. And that's just that to me, the New York Yankees news reporters caused that. And it was just a sad situation. I mean, the nostalgic feeling of playing with the Yankees was uncomparable to any other team, but it wasn't a team. It was just a bunch of guys showing up and running from the reporters and then getting ready for the game. And I never saw or never talked to Torre probably more than twice the whole year. And it was just, I mean, it's hard to explain, but it was a situation where, I mean, I guess when you have so many superstars on the Yankees and everybody comes in the clubhouse and everybody's going their separate ways, Torre did more of a, it's hard to, to run a ship like the Yankees and I guess accommodate every pitcher, every hitter, everybody on that ship. But Bobby Cox did a great job of doing that.
Bob, one more for Chris before we let him go.
And Chris, just to be in the same bullpen with a guy like Mariano Rivera, who will be in the Hall of Fame soon. I mean, he had his typical year in 03, about an ERA of 1.5. He gave up very few home runs, walked no one, and put that cutter on the map and everything. And obviously, probably the greatest reliever in our generation. What was it like hanging out with him? And he seemed like a very business-like type pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, when I look back at that year that we had, and knowing that Mariano Rivera was ready to close any game, and when he come in the game, the game's over. I mean, it's just a special. It was a special year. I mean, all around, and just to be able to look at Mariano Rivera as probably, I mean, I don't even think anybody would question he was the best closer ever. Mm-hmm. And just to see how he carried himself in the clubhouse, I mean, you couldn't tell it. And that's what really touched my heart with the kind of character that he had in the clubhouse. I mean, he was a leader. He set a good example for the rookies and the young guys coming up, and he was always there to give you a helping hand when you were struggling. And that's what I remember about Mariano Rivera. And not that he was his ERAs or how good he was, the example he set inside the clubhouse, and that's what I'm going to remember him for.
Chris, what are you doing now?
I got 3 kids in college. I got a wife teaching physics in high school. I run a youth foundation that helps underprivileged kids throughout the South. I do a lot of speaking in churches, and that's pretty much it. I love helping people. I do a lot of jail ministry. That's so rewarding. I help people, I serve people, and hopefully I'm a good dad to my kids.
So, Chris, how can our listeners stay up to date with all the great things that you're doing, whether they're following you online or it's on social media?
Well, I do my Bible study on Facebook every morning, and the website for my foundation is ChrisHammondFoundation.com, and they keep up with me and then reach out to me if they ever need my help, especially on Facebook. And I welcome all the people listening to reach out to me and give me their insight on what they've been hearing and how I can help them.
Well, Chris, it's certainly been fantastic having you as part of the show tonight. So much of that happened in your career that we'd love to get more of your stories and your insights. We hope you'll come back and do it again with us real soon. You've been great having you on the show.
Hey, let me know when you need my help, and I'll be ready. I appreciate y'all having me.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Chris. Take care. All the best to you and your family.
Thank you, brother.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
That is former Major League pitcher Chris Hammond. Bob, very good stuff out of Chris. Stuff I wouldn't have thought, when talking about his time in Cincinnati. Now, the Lou Piniella piece, I would have gotten, right? But talking about the corporate atmosphere with the Yankees and Joe Torre, I think I would have gotten that too. But interesting hearing his perspectives.
It is, Chris. And again, it's fascinating when guys like Eckersley, who made that transition from starting to relieving, he's the number one guy that comes to mind. But there's a lot of guys that have done it but not successfully. Chris did it. I mean, from 2002 to 2005, Chris, I mean, he went 19-6. His ERA was in the low twos. And he was a pitcher, Chris, never threw above 90, crafty. You know, we'll ask him next time about the newfound pitchers who It's basically throw your arm out so you can do Tommy John surgery. He was crafty. He was not a thrower. He was a pitcher. So great getting his insights.
When Bob and I come back, we'll be turning on our Thursday Night Tailgate spotlight on the positive. Stick with us. Hear which players are doing great things out there in their communities. And then we'll wrap up the show. And we're going to do that on the other side of these words about our friends at the Salt Creek Golf Retreat and DP Quality Foods.